Hi, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 14th of June. The risk of suicide among male U.S. veterans is double that of the general public population, according to a study that was released in the Journal of Epidemiology and Community Health on Monday of this week. The lead author of the study, Dr. Mark Kaplan, who's joining us the first half hour of the show this hour, says we need to be more alert to the problem of suicide as a major public health issue, and we need to do better screening among individuals who have served in the military to probe for their mental health risk as well as gun availability. This has been a very long-term study. He, for 12 years, and his team of researchers followed more than 104,000 veterans who had served in the armed forces at some time between 1917 and 1994 and compared them with 216,000 non-veterans. At biggest risk were veterans who were white, those who had gone to college, and those with activity limitations, according to this study, which was funded by the National Institute of Mental Health. We're going to be welcoming phone calls for Professor Mark Kaplan, who is in the School of Community Health at Portland State University and adjunct associate professor of psychiatry at Oregon Health and Science University. Later, we will be speaking with the chief of mental health service line at the Middleton Memorial Veterans Hospital out of Madison. And we're welcoming phone calls as well. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. Dr. Kaplan, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Good morning.
What prompted you to do this study?
Well, we have been funded by the National Institute of Mental Health to do a study over the last. We were working on a few separate studies, and what caught our attention was the fact that one of the predictors of suicide mortality that kept on coming up over and over again in our findings was veteran status. In the data base that we used in our research, we were able to ascertain whether the individual had served in the military or not. And as you correctly noted, most of the veterans in this large database had served in the military at some point between World War One and the First Gulf War.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, as you correctly know, they were followed over time. We looked at their risks of dying of suicide. And we also looked at the risks of dying of other causes, and we can get into that in a few moments, over a 12-year period. We compared veterans and non-veterans, but what perhaps is unique in terms of our study is the fact that most earlier studies have had relied almost exclusively on samples drawn from the Department of Veteran Affairs facilities, that is, from the patient population, or many of the studies that had looked at the risk of suicide among veterans earlier had done so with, had focused, almost exclusively on the veterans from the Vietnam era.
Mm-hmm. This is just a matter of, you know, looking at this in a very simplistic fashion, but it does seem to me as though I cannot imagine serving in war. I cannot imagine what must happen to your mind to serve in war, and probably some wars have been more difficult to return from than others in terms of how people have been greeted, in terms of whether or not there was a large controversy about whether we should be there, if our veterans are heroes, if they're not heroes. It just seems to me as though you were demanding something that is so big of a human being, right? It's a very big thing to serve in a war.
Indeed. Although there's probably a lot of variability in terms of the experiences that former military personnel had. For instance, you know, some, as we see now with the Iraq and Afghanistan situation, that, you know, there's a difference in terms of those who are in the front line, who are experiencing combat-related experiences on a daily basis, who are wondering about the mission, the uncertainty in an environment that is extremely harsh physically, geographically, mm-hmm. maybe even culturally. So I suspect that there's probably also a lot of variability. I think some of the stereotypes that we have about military service stem from the Vietnam era, as you probably know.
Mm-hmm.
Country was torn apart where there was ambivalence at best. and perhaps even hatred towards some of the returning military personnel, and that persisted. And we, you know, we know what happened after the Vietnam era. Many of the vets experienced PTSD, high suicide rates, high high levels of other mental illnesses. So I think that our imagery of the experience that former military personnel had stems in part from what we saw during the Vietnam period.
What about, have you broken this down when it comes to different wars? So that is there a difference in the suicide rate among World War II veterans when you compare it with the first Iraq war?
Right. Well, we're unable to do that, but what we were able to do, and I think which is significant in terms of, the question might come up, well, how does this relate more directly to the current situation in Afghanistan and Iraq? What we were able to do is adjust for when they served. In other words, above and beyond when the individual, and we're talking about males in this case, there were very few females in our data. We asked ourselves above and beyond when they served, what was the risk or what is the risk of suicide in that population? So what we can, I think, confidently argue is that above and beyond when an individual serves and a variety of other factors, the risks of suicide among vets exceeds that of their non-veteran counterparts.
Uh-huh.
And one of the other things that we might touch on, too, is that firearm suicide figured very was also central to this analysis. And we found that, for instance, and as you probably noted or may have seen in one of the write-ups, that veterans were 58% more likely to die of firearm suicide than their non-veteran counterparts. When we looked at the group as a whole, just compared, aggregated all the vets, the suicide decedents who were veterans versus those who were non-veterans, among the vets, 84% of the vets who completed suicide did so with a firearm versus 55 in the general population. So those are two. That's also an important difference between them. And we also found in a supplementary analysis that vets were more likely to own guns. So they were more likely to die of suicide. They were more likely to use guns when they completed suicide. And they were more likely to have access to guns.
Mm-hmm. So is there an element of mental health screening that is missing in VA hospitals? And I wonder how many of these vets were treated at VA hospitals or how many were treated outside VA hospitals.
That's an excellent question. And that is, we still don't have a clear answer to that. But I will tell you this, that one of the things that prompted us to do this study was the fact, and we point this out in the report, that there was a study done in the early around 2001, a national survey of veterans. It's perhaps one of the largest, as far as I know, largest national survey of veterans. And it showed, and this is important for our study, that three quarters of vets seek care outside of the VA system. In other words, only a quarter of vets in the U.S. seek their care through the VA system. Now, the VA has recently instituted more aggressive, proactive screening program, and most VAs, as I recently learned, now have a prevention coordinator. So they are doing a better job at screening vets who are seen through the VA. But as far as what's going on in the population at large is unknown, and that was really one of the reasons or justifications for looking at veterans in the general population, that is called population-based, as opposed to veterans who seek care or receive care through the VA, through VA facilities.
And why, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but that's quite a striking figure. Why is it that three quarters of vets are seeking their care outside the VA system?
Well, perhaps some of them don't qualify. Some of them just don't want to go to the VA.
Hmm.
I'm sure that there are a lot of answers. Maybe somebody might call in with that who works within the VA. But there isn't one answer to that, as I've been learning. And I've been trying to get an answer to that as well.
Yeah. What recommendations do you have, Dr. Kaplan, as a result of doing this study?
Well, a couple things. Obviously, the more immediate one is if a family is faced with a son or daughter who might be returning from Afghanistan or Iraq, you know, it's important that they monitor any dramatic changes in mood. Withdrawing is also another sign of potential depression and possibly suicidality. Expression of loss of purpose in living, hopelessness, a sense of hopelessness, anger, perhaps even rage, and also increased use of alcohol or other drugs might be the more immediate concerns. But perhaps at a policy level, we might be. One, I think we need to focus more on suicide as a major public health problem. That's an issue that extends beyond our study. And on top of that, as I alluded to a few moments ago, guns figure so prominently in this problem, and that we need to begin thinking about the role of guns and the risks of that guns pose in terms of suicide. Quite often the debate about gun control focuses almost exclusively on the criminal justice side, mm-hmm. as opposed to the mental health. But we know that over 60% or nearly 60% of all people in this country who die of suicide, and 30,000 do so a year, do so with a gun. And in the vets, that, as I said, 84% of veterans who kill themselves do so with a gun.
So you're saying that we need more mental health services available to these vets, but also that there should be perhaps a question asked: do you have a gun in the house? You know, how is the gun locked, or should you have a gun in the house, or how do you deal with this?
Exactly. In an earlier study, I've been researching suicide for about 15 years, and some of my earlier work focused on firearm suicide because, as I noted earlier, most suicides in this country involve guns.
Yep.
Most are, in fact, I would even call it firearm suicide to be more accurate. So I think there needs to be more attention paid to the role of guns. There needs to be more money earmarked for the study of firearm suicide, not just suicide in general.
We're going to welcome phone calls for our guest. Our number is 800-486-8655. We're talking about a study, a long-term study of veterans, 104,000 veterans who had served in the armed forces at some time between 1917 and 1994, compared with 216,000 non-veterans. The risk of suicide among male U.S. veterans, double that of the general population, according to the study. The lead author is our guest this first half hour, Dr. Mark Kaplan. And he is a professor of community health at Portland State University. Special interest in the study of mental health and health behavior among older adults. The National Institute of Mental Health has funded his research. He also teaches urban health, health behavior, and substance abuse, and is an associate professor of psychiatry at Oregon Health and Science University. Here's the number. Did I give it to you? 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. In Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The second half hour of this hour, we will be speaking with the chief of the Mental Health Service Line at the William Middleton Memorial Veterans Hospital in Madison. All right, let's go to phone calls now for Dr. Mark Kaplan, and we start with Larry from Menominee. Hi, Larry.
Hi, how are you? I've got a very bad cell connection, but my brother committed suicide with a gun, and I have friends who have had experience with suicide by people who they know of committed suicide with cars. I don't think the issue of a gun availability for suicide, it's the choice that people make is what they choose. If somebody decides to commit suicide with a gun, they usually take themselves.
Your brother a veteran?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, he is.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he was.
Mm-hmm.
And the other experience I had, a friend of mine was nearly killed by someone committing suicide with a car, and he did lose two of his children by that person committing suicide with his car, and there was a suicide note. I would much rather have had him had help than commit suicide with a car. But let's look at what the real cause is. Now, it doesn't have anything to do with a gun. It's the most benign way is with a gun.
Right.
Dr. Kaplan.
Yes. Well, those are all excellent points about the guns. I didn't mean to suggest that guns alone cause suicide, but one thing that I want to point out, and which the caller just noted, is that people who, you know, the rate of suicide is underestimated. We don't really know the true rate of suicide. For instance, it is possible that that individual who killed themselves in a car along with two other people was not even counted as a suicide case. Mm-hmm. It might have been gone, might have been certified as an accident or accidental death as opposed to suicide. So I think it underscores the fact that when we talk about the rate of suicide in this country, whether veterans or in the general population, we might be missing by a factor of, you know, by 25%. So it is probably higher than what most people think. The fact, the thing about guns is important from a clinical point of view. That is to say that when a person uses a gun, the window of opportunity to intervene and to try to save that individual is very limited. Guns, when a person uses guns, there's a certain determination to end his or her life. And more women, by the way, are using guns to end their lives. Another thing, too, is that in terms of help, there are many individuals who complete suicide who have had contact with healthcare providers shortly before their final attempt. And it suggests that most, for instance, primary care physicians who happen to be the where most of the mental health care is delivered are missing some cases. And I think that what we face today is the fact that many people who do end their lives have been slipping through the cracks of the healthcare system.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So do you recommend, be it for a primary care physician, be it for the VA, that there be a separate program, mental health program for veterans, or that physicians need to be alerted to the special problems that may come from the special stresses of serving in war and deal with those, know your patient better, or how do you put this into the system?
Well, I think that, first of all, if what I said earlier holds true, that most vets are being served outside the VA, that mm-hmm. it's important that if there are any signs of depression, of possible suicidality, that a person ascertain their military status. Also, one of the things that you noted early on was that in an additional analysis, we looked at the role of functional impairment, disability, if you will,
mm-hmm.
And the role that plays. And that is a big factor in terms of suicidal behavior among vets. So the fact is that probably most community, most of the vets will be seen by community clinicians outside of the VA, and they need to be more alert to the signs of depression, suicidality, and also probe for firearm availability. And I'm not saying that that alone is the cause of their behavior, but it is a big factor, and there's probably a lot more we can do. Again, in an earlier study we did, it turns out that, and we were looking at older adults who are suicidal, it turns out that many primary care physicians, in fact, about 50%, don't even, when faced with a patient who is depressed or suicidal, does not probe for firearm availability.
Mm.
It is more prone or more likely to ask about their misuse of medication. Well, it turns out that most men, older men, white men, who kill themselves do so with a gun.
Mm-hmm. So how do you screen for that? I mean, well, what do you say to somebody? Do you have a gun in your house? Should you?
First of all, it's the family, too, needs to be brought into this. It's not just the individual, but, you know, gun ownership is high. It's high in the veteran population, and we need to be talking about that. And that's not just the clinical issue, but it's also a policy question. You know, we have, as I said a few moments ago, the debate around gun control has really not focused enough on the role that guns play in suicide.
Mm-hmm. Let's
that is to say, what I'm arguing, and this might seem might spark some discussion in your program.
Oh, I think so. Yes, I know you are.
Say that there is a very strong correlation, and this has been studied both at the ecological case control studies that have shown that access to guns is a risk factor for suicidal behavior.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call. Billy is next from Rushford, Minnesota. Hi, Billy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a contact for Vietnam Veterans Against the War in Minnesota, and our organization was the group that started the storefront counseling when it was called Post-Vietnam Syndrome, mm-hmm. which evolved into PTSD. Right. And I'm also a combat vet from that era. And several of my friends have committed suicide, and I probably suffer from PTSD myself, as my girlfriend says. And I thought I would just put in a few comments. The first one would be on the VA facilities themselves. Since there was this recent scandal with care at the VA facilities, people act like that's new. And the VA facilities, I don't think, have been very good for a long time. And I could give an example of a relapse of malaria where I sat in the waiting room for so many hours that I left, and also a piece of shrapnel that I brought out of my hand myself with a razor blade because I didn't want to go back to the hospital. And I guess I would say one of the reasons we started the counseling, and I did some of that counseling because I had a psych minor, and we couldn't find psychiatrists and psychologists that would work with us because we had very little money. And the VA hospital was prescribing drugs to people to take care of their post-traumatic stress, and most of these people were already self-medicating. So all that was happening was, like one of the people in my group was drinking a quart of vodka every night, and he said that was just so he could go to sleep.
Mm.
So these are just sort of general comments, and if you send someone into the culture of war, you can't expect them to come back unchanged, mm-hmm. no matter what their job is. And I guess I'd like to put in one other little plug. The 40th anniversary of the founding of Vietnam Veterans Against the War is being celebrated in Chicago over the August 4th, 5th, and 6th weekend.
Hmm.
And people can go to vvaw.org to find out information about the organization and our counseling services.
All right. It's interesting, Billy, you've spent so much time with that, isn't it? It was quite some time ago. It has stayed with you.
Yes, it has, and the reason I said that about myself still having it is I have nightmares that I wake up from, and my girlfriend keeps telling me I should have counseling.
Hmm.
But I feel as though I've made it as far as I have without any counseling other than from other vets that I, you know, hang out with and talk to.
Hmm.
When I was actually doing the counseling or trying to, everything got worse for me because they just kept bringing memories back that I had mm-hmm. been pretty good at blocking.
Mm-hmm.
Billy, can I ask you a question? Kathleen?
Yes, he's there, I think. Are you still there, Billy?
Yes,
Billy?
I am.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Just a question. What do you think would be, what would it take for the VA to make it a little bit more appealing for a vet to go in? How would you, if you had some say, would redesign the mental health services offered through the VA?
Well, since I haven't gone in for help in quite a while, I would go back to how it was when I was trying to do things myself. I know that there's an Iraq Veterans Against the War also, and we have contact with those people. But because the VA, it has a bureaucracy that's very similar to the military. And when you come out of the military and you've served in a war, you oftentimes, the last thing you want is bureaucracy. And just sort of the way there's like a chain of command from the receptionist desk up through the doctors and first nurses you see, and that sort of thing. And I think it reminds you of that thing you had just gotten away from.
Hmm. That's an interesting point.
Yeah, excellent point. Appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
I guess one other thing that I could add to this is I did get in trouble once when I was having a bout of PTSD. And I should say very much about that, except I probably wouldn't use a gun to kill myself. I would probably use an explosive because it would be a bigger bang.
Dr. Kaplan, how do you respond to that?
Well, I'm very sorry to hear hear the story, and I think Billy touched on something that I have heard from others as well, other vets who talk about the military bureaucracy within the VA system, that it seems like they're just it's an extension of the military, and it's really not supposed to be, and I think that's one of the problems. So there are barriers. So one of the other things I want to point out, which I think Billy is alluding to, and that is to say that there's the maleness of the problem. That when we talk about vet suicide, when we talk about suicide, it is men are at much greater risk than women are, and mental health services have not kept pace with that idea. That is to say, design the program to meet the needs. Men are probably less likely to go in to see a mental health counselor. You know, men are told from boys on throughout their adulthood to just suck it up, and that's very common in the military. So I think we need to get over that and make it a little bit more appealing for men to go into treatment. Unless we do that and continue with the way we've been doing things, I think more and more men are going to slip through the cracks and just walk away with in frustration and perhaps follow Billy's lead, who's been frustrated with the system.
Yeah, thanks Billy so much for your call, and Dr. Kaplan, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity,
Dr. Mark Kaplan, our guest this first half hour of the program. We're continuing on the same theme here, so don't leave us. And he is the lead author of a study that was released this Monday that looks at the risk of suicide among male U.S. veterans, double that of the general population. He studied for 12 years, 104,000 veterans who had served in the armed forces sometime between 1917 and 1994, and compared them with more than 216,000 non-veterans. He says we need to be more alert to the problem of suicide as a major public health issue, and to do a better job of screening among individuals who have served in the military, probe for their mental health risk, as well as gun availability. And we're going to be joined this next part of the program by Dr. Dean Cron, who is chief of the mental health service line at the William S. Middleton Memorial Veterans Hospital in Madison, welcoming phone calls for him as well at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Dr. Dean Cron, hello. Thank you so much for being with us. Oops, Dr. Cron is not there yet. So we'll get him on the line, and we thank Dr. Mark Kaplan for being with us. Dr. Kaplan, the professor in the School of Community Health at Portland State University and adjunct associate professor of psychiatry at Oregon Health and Science University, who conducted this major study. And Dr. Dean Cron is with us now. Hi, Dr. Cron.
Hello.
Hi, thanks so much for being with us. Did this study come as a great surprise to you or not?
Not really. It's sort of an extension of data that people have known of before, the extension into the veterans that are not served by the Department of Veterans Affairs is an important next step in research, but nothing's very surprising about this, unfortunately.
Yeah. What about, and you'll have to speak for where you are, but you may have some understanding of VA hospitals around the country. What about the kind of screening that is going on right now for mental health risk as well as gun availability? Is there a lot of that screening at your facility and at other VA hospitals?
Every veteran at this VA hospital and at the VA hospitals I know about is screened annually for depression symptoms, for post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms, and for alcohol misuse symptoms. And if positive, recently we've put into play a formal suicide screen as opposed to a more informal exploration of that positive depression screen. So these things, the suicide screens, are in the process of being formalized at each site, and there's also a suicide prevention coordinator at each site in the entire VA system.
Mm-hmm.
So I think VA, and especially under the leadership of Ira Katz, who's the leader of mental health services at the at the Washington level of VA, is pretty aware of this, and this is one of our major goals, is how do we decrease this?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the study doesn't really tell us how to do that.
And so the study might be more applicable then, unless you guys are really advanced when it comes to VA hospitals, for people who are seeing vets outside the VA system.
Yeah, I think that that is an interesting part of this, is that screening for veteran status in non-VA settings is probably not very frequent.
Mm-hmm.
And this does, it's a doubling of the suicide rate. But I really did some back-of-the-envelope calculations, and I don't have the whole study in front of me because it's not released yet.
Mm-hmm.
But given the report, they followed 104,000 veterans for 12 years, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of that 12 years, 197 of the veterans had died by suicide, which is about 16 a year. So that's 1.6 veterans to die by suicide out of 10,000 veterans every year,
mm-hmm.
versus 0.8 non-veterans in 10,000 non-veterans per year. Now, if the average family practice doctor has maybe 2,000 people in their panel and they turn them over, half of those people every year, they'll see 10,000 unique patients in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference between the non-veterans and the veterans in suicides over those 10 years period will be a 0.8 of a veteran,
mm-hmm.
or a patient. So this is a call to improved systems, but it doesn't really help a person so much in the emergency room,
right?
Except for telling them it's a veteran, this person's a veteran, and maybe I should ask about some specific veteran-related, combat-related issues.
Such as what?
Well, there's a couple of them. You know, issues that lead to PTSD, trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that sort of thing. And then the other thing they do bring up is the issue of firearms.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're doing here at Middleton is we're just rolling out a program of making free gun locks available.
Hmm.
And one of the things we're trying to do is make the gun locks available to everybody as a safety issue. Because it turns out that if you have... most people who have guns in their home, if they don't, you know, if, for example, if they don't commit suicide with them, it doesn't preclude an accident from happening or somebody else to commit suicide with them.
Right.
And it also, gun locks just give you one more barrier to think about a potentially impulsive action.
I'm thinking that somewhere, I read this last week, and I can't remember where because I got too much information in my mind sometimes, but wasn't there a study just released last week that showed that a lot of people who have guns in their houses, and there are a lot of people who have guns in their houses, do not have them locked?
That's true. And we don't know for sure how much gun locks will decrease the use of the guns in suicide.
Yeah.
But... we figure it can't increase it.
Mm-hmm.
We do know from other studies that it decreases accidental deaths in homes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of the route we've taken to address this. As I've talked to lots of veterans about this, and certainly they didn't recommend to us that we take on firearm ownership head on. But firearm safety, I think everybody's in favor of that.
Yeah, right, right. Our number is 800-486-8655, 227-2050. If you're joining us in the Milwaukee area, we're looking at a study that was done on veterans and suicide. And our guest this half hour is Dr. Dean Cron, chief of the mental health service line at the William S. Middleton Memorial Veterans Hospital in Madison, where they've already taken on this suicide screening, and they're looking at firearm locks, and they're very much in tune with this issue. Perhaps the organizations that are not are those, of course, outside the VA system who perhaps, according to the study, need to be more alert to mental health issues among veterans. Let's go back to phone calls now, and we go to Jackie from Chicago. Hi, Jackie.
Hi.
Hi.
Good morning. I was very intrigued by your guest this morning, and I have to say I agree a lot with what I heard Dr. Kaplan say. I am a union representative for federal employees, and I work in the Wisconsin area quite a bit. One of the things of concern to our union is the large number of patients that doctors are required to see based on the funding that the VA is receiving. So that's a concern to me. But a more personal concern is my daughter, who is an Iraq War veteran, has been suffering from depression since she returned almost 3 years ago now, is seeing a doctor in the VA, and it was very difficult for us to get her to do that, mostly because, as Dr. Kaplan said earlier, about the bureaucracy, about the whole uniformity, and it's so much like the military, it's very difficult to go back to that when that's what you're trying to forget about.
Right.
But we did convince her to go to the VA. It's been very difficult for her to get appointments. Like most people in our country, we work full-time. If we have a day job, it's kind of hard to get the employer to understand that you need these additional days and hours off so that you can work on your mental health so you don't commit suicide. She was a gun owner. We convinced her finally. It took us quite a while to working on her to convince her to get rid of the gun.
Oh, my.
But I spoke to her earlier this week, and she was not exactly in the best of moods. I think the VA system is wonderful. I think they do a lot of great work. I just think that the system's hands are a little bit tied based on funding.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think the facilities, especially in the mental health area, there needs to be some way of having more weekend or evening appointments available to the veterans that are trying to reach out and get help. And I'll take any comments from your...
And where is she going? What VA is she going to, your daughter, Jackie?
Alexandria, Virginia is where she lives.
Okay.
I have not asked her the name of her current medical facility. She was going to Pines in Chicago.
Okay. Thank you so much for your call. Dr. Kron.
Well, yes, Jackie, thanks for the call. And even more importantly, thank your daughter for her service to the country. Well, obviously, people come back from war changed. And I think one of the best parts of Dr. Kaplan's research is to highlight that that's been going on for many, many years. The funding for VA hospitals and VA clinics in terms of mental health has actually taken a dramatic step forward over the last 3 years, roughly, and looks like it's going to continue into the future. There's been earmarks, that's a dirty word these days. Within the VA budget, there's money set aside for mental health care, about $100 million extra that's been funneled into mental health-specific programs over the last several years and will continue into the future. So things should be improved. There is also a mandate in VA that every VA medical center will have at least one night a week of extended mental health and substance abuse care. And I'm sure that's going to be extending further as we go forward. It certainly is a very busy, hardworking batch of veterans that is returning from the Iraq and Afghanistan conflicts, and trying to get them more and better access is critical. We just opened a Tuesday evening set of mental health clinics, and have had addiction clinics open in the evenings, both here and at our Rockford clinic for some time. So we're working on it. It certainly isn't as good as it as it could be or should be, but it will expand as we go forward.
Mm-hmm. More phone calls in a moment. Dr. Dean Cron is our guest this half hour. Mental Health Service Line, William S. Middleton Memorial Veterans Hospital in Madison. He's chief of mental health, and we're welcoming phone calls for him at 800-486-8655. We thank Jackie for the call. More calls in a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Back to phone calls now for Dr. Dean Cron. Amy from Madison is next. Hi, Amy.
Hi there.
Hi.
I wanted to say I think Dr. Cron's clinic sounds like it's doing a great job, but I really appreciate the two callers who have already called in because they've made some really important points. I think the previous caller, Jackie's daughter's experience with the VA is much more than norm. My husband is a Vietnam vet. It is a standard assumption among all of his friends and my friends' children who have served in subsequent military actions that the VA is to be avoided at all costs if you want decent health care.
Hmm.
And several of our friends have died from shoddy health care at various VAs. I include ones in a couple in the South as well as the one in Santa Monica in California. And I think that I agree with Dr. Kaplan when he says that it is systemic changes that need to happen. It is a change in the overall approach to treating veterans. I think our society has been embarrassed by them for years, and there is a lot of lip service paid to support our troops, but not enough funding. The doctors don't get paid appropriately who work at the VA. Most of them in the big cities are volunteers on their off days, and while they're excellent and the VA is well-intentioned, it just doesn't do enough. Unfortunately, I'll take any response.
All right, thanks for the call, Dr. Cron.
Well, I think maybe one of the things that would help is to talk about a little history in VA. And first of all, I feel very badly that the caller and her husband and their friends have had bad experiences. I would have agreed with that assessment in the early 1980s when I had my first experiences in VA hospitals. I didn't think they were very good. I thought they were understaffed. We certainly did not understand PTSD when I was a young, wet-behind-the-ears psychiatrist in 84, 85, 86 in the Minneapolis VA. I left the VA in 86 and came back a number of years later. And I've been very proud to see the progress we've made since about 1995. I think all the major raters of healthcare services in the United States now put the VA as one of the top deliverers of healthcare.
Mm.
That would never have been said and shouldn't have been said in 1984, 85, or 86.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I was treating a lot of Vietnam vets in 84 through 86, and remember the diagnosis of PTSD was first promulgated in 1980. Even though we knew there was something different about vets, nobody knew what to do. I often tell my Vietnam vet patients today that I was a pretty well-trained, pretty sophisticated, pretty smart young psychiatrist in 84 through 86, and three of the four things I did for veterans back then turned out to be wrong.
Hmm. Hmm.
They were what everybody thought should happen, but they were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So now we do have treatments that are proven to be efficacious and effective for veterans with PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
They include psychological treatments like cognitive processing therapy, imagery rehearsal treatment, prolonged exposure, and they include medications like serotonin-specific reuptake inhibitors and prazosin.
Hmm.
So we're in a whole different world than we
mm-hmm.
were then.
Mm-hmm.
I would invite a lot of people who got that feeling, as I did, frankly, as a provider in 84 through 86, to come back and try us again.
Hmm.
On the other hand, I understand if you just want to avoid us. The problem I see in avoiding us is the best research on this and the best training on this is done in the VA.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think people would say that's fairly clear. Right now, for example, in terms of access, if you call our, you know, people are told just walk in and we'll see you the same day. So in terms of getting in, it's pretty easy to get in. So I think we've made some great changes as a system. I know we've made great changes in Madison over the last 15 years, and I hope people will give us another chance if they've had bad experiences in the past.
Let's go to Gary next, our next caller from Watertown. Hi, Gary.
This isn't a question, just a comment. Back in 05, when I made my suicide attempt, it was as simple as going down to Walmart and buying a shotgun. So, you know, it was quite available at that time.
So you're still around, Gary?
Yeah. I'm still around. I almost did it, but, of course, I'm still here. But
are you a veteran?
Yes. Not the combat, though. I was in the Air Force, and so, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And do you think that, did you get help?
Well, yeah, I was through the years, you know, off and on through the county and the VA and all. And on that day, after I took the shotgun back, you know, and I got my money back, because surprisingly, Walmart called the police, you know, of course, and then they took me up to a hospital in the Fond du Lac. So at least they did that. So,
Dr. Cron.
Well, Gary, I'm glad you're here.
Yeah.
It is fairly amazing when you think about the mental state you can be in when you walk in and buy a gun. It is pretty easy to do something impulsive but permanent. I don't have a quick and easy fix that's also constitutional and everything else. I'm just cognizant of the fact that we need to ask people about firearm ownership and about their plans. Because if you try suicide with a gun, usually you're not around for a second attempt.
Right. Thanks, Gary, for your call. Peter is next from Madison. Hi, Peter.
Hi, how are you doing? My name's Pete.
Hi, Pete.
Hi. I personally have nothing but high appraisal for the VA and the medical help. In fact, I just came out of 4 months out of the VA down in Tolma, Wisconsin.
Mm.
And I also visited last year Madison. I think Dr. Bloss is probably listening. But, you know, for a vet, you know, if you really got problems, address them, you know. And what you can do is they have mental hygiene and they have the psychiatric floors. You know, just go in the triage, to say, hey, I think I have problems. Because usually if a person thinks they have problems, or if they ever thought they have problems, they got problems, and they should address them. My problem started after a divorce in 1985. And I've been in and out of the VA, PTSD programs twice, drug and alcohol once, dual diagnosis three or four times, and I always keep coming back. But then again, I refuse to give up.
Dr. Cron.
Well, Pete, thanks for the kind words, and good luck on your recovery journey. I hope you keep trying. It's kind of a one day at a time, every day kind of thing, unfortunately, for lots of folks. But then that's how life is lived, is one day at a time. I think there are lots of programs. Sometimes that scares people off. It's like, as somebody said earlier, there's a bureaucracy. I think we've made it now at Madison VA anyway, at quite easy to walk into sort of any of our front doors, and if you say you have a mental health problem, you will be seen quickly by a triage team, and most likely you'll have a full evaluation that day. That is being ratcheted up even further this summer with a whole lot of projects going on that make it even harder to fall through cracks.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, good luck, Pete.
Really, Pete, thanks very much for the call. Well, thank you, Dr. Cron, so much for being with us. Appreciate your time.
Well, thanks for having me.
Dr. Dean Cron, chief of the mental health service line at the William S. Middleton Memorial Veterans Hospital in Madison. We also thank Dr. Mark Kaplan, who was the chief author of the study that we've been referencing during the course of this hour. Rhonda Fanning produced this program. Thank you, Rhonda. John Treader, our on-air producer. Thanks, John. And thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. This show will repeat at 10 o'clock tonight in case you would like to particularly tell a veteran about it, or somebody who loves a veteran. And we'll be with you again tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. I'm Kathleen Dunn. It's a minute now before 11, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.